Welcome, welcome, everybody. It is my honor, it is my privilege to introduce you guys to my sister, my soul sister, like with my whole soul. Like, if the sky goes falling, you call Christy Brown for me, because she is has been a beacon of light. She has been someone who has taught me so much about myself. And so it is truly an honor to introduce her to you all, because she has nothing but goodness to give to the world, which is why she all famous and whatnot now. Because she's been out here giving this good love via food. And I think that we'll talk more about this, but food is really the vehicle, but the ministry is love. The way that Christy moves in this world is really about bringing people together and sharing love. And so I am gassed that you guys get the opportunity to meet this woman. And when you go to Seattle, you better take your tail over to communion. Welcome, sister.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a wonderful introduction. I'll take it.
You deserve it. You deserve it. How are you this fine day?
I am blessed. I'm blessed. I have a wonderful life, and it's getting kicked into high gear right now. So I'm just sitting back before the quiet before the storm, and just ready to kick it in gear.
I know that's right. Hallelujah. So please tell everyone who is listening about your journey as a chef. We all know that you have this brilliant, amazing restaurant that you opened up with your son, my nephew, Damon Bomar. But your journey to get here has been your own. Give us just a little backstory.
I think that it's funny, especially right now, having a teenager to like think back on this story, because you try to like tell it in a way that may inspire the teenager, which doesn't always happen. But man, I've always loved cooking. I really have, and I'm a big believer in you should do what it is that you love, because you're gonna have to work hard if you want to be successful. And so it got to be something that you love. And so when my dad came to me and was like, "Figure out your life, little girl," I knew it had to be something surrounding food, because I love to eat. I didn't really understand or be able to articulate what I knew back then, which is, we're so much more alike than different. And whenever you go, wherever you go, you will find some kind of similarities that you can bring home. And so really just that inspiration is has really motivated me throughout my entire life. And I love what it does. I love how it brings people together, and that's really been the thing. And so I went, knowing that, went to culinary school after figuring out, I needed a quick dash into some money, because I'd gotten pregnant and needed a way to sustain myself, and was like, "Okay, you had these grandiose ideas about what you wanted to do, but here you are. Let's make it happen quicker." So that's what I did, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wow. You know, the love that you can taste in your food. People say this about good cooks all the time. You could taste the love in your food. You could give me a recipe, it ain't gonna come out the way that you do it. 'Cause there's a particular kind of love that you got, but it's the love for the people that I notice in the flavors of your food. And I noticed it in particular when you were making the hummus, which is a strange thing, because I've had so many different ways that you've made food. But it was the seasonings that you used in the hummus that reminded me of your connection to all of humanity. When, at what point do you feel like you started pulling from different cultures? Is that when, or when did you start pulling from the different cultures to make what you call Seattle soul?
Well, I grew up with that. Like my dad, like he, my dad loved to cook. He really did. He loved to feed people, and he was a teacher. And I think that was the way he kind of blew off steam when he got home. And so, like, he was always interested in it. And my mom was like the worldly one. She was always with her music, and she was always around a lot of different cultures of people and artists and that kind of thing. So I think them two together inspired that within him. And then that's just how I grew up. Mm. And so then we moved to Seattle from Kansas City. It was so much more access and easier access at that to so many different kind of foods. He just lost his mind. So we were in different stores and he's grabbing shit he had no understanding of. And I always think it's so funny because he loved hearts of palm. And he would throw it in spaghetti. You know, he would just try to freak it because he's like, okay, well, that sounds, you know, this tastes meaty. Let's throw it, you know, like, and then he was trying to help my mom eat better because she was diabetic. And so then he would try all this stuff. So it was not really like all fancy and everything. It was kind of out of necessity and his curiosity. And that's just really how it happened. And so for me, like growing up in Seattle, where there's so many different cultures represented, it was just easy to do. Mm-hmm. And we're more like than different. So it's like, oh, you know, let me try this and let's see how that works together. And it was like, oh yeah, it does work, you know? And so I think my mindset is more often than not, it does work together. And then when people only use what they're familiar with, then I feel uninspired by that. And get bored really easily.
That's the God's honest truth. You know, another thing that I think is really powerful for you is I think you and I both were coming up in a social justice around environmental food justice at a similar time, but you were some steps ahead of me because you understood some things I didn't understand. At what point did you really understand the impact of using locally sourced foods? And did your love for the interconnectedness of all of these different ethnicities inform or inspire that decision to work with local farmers?
I think from a social justice lens, it was like, okay, here I am in this city and I don't see anybody that looks like me doing this work. Mm-hmm. That's getting the acclaim that they deserve.
That's right.
Right. So it was just like, okay, well, let me start getting involved with things. And I, maybe through culinary school, I learned about different farmers and kind of local agriculture. And, you know, being in Washington State is such a huge, huge thing. But I think that just that curiosity of like, how far can I take this career? Where can I go with this thing? And then finding out, oh, wow, there's just so much available that nobody in my community knows about. The mm-hmm. fuck is this? Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of, it was like me kind of being curious started it. And then when I got into it, I was like, oh, wow, this is ridiculous. And then just finding out more and more, it just, I felt like it was my charge to share that with other people. And so that's where it got started. It's still growing because it's a very interesting conversation about like access to that food, how much it costs, how do you be consistent with it? Yeah, it's a huge conversation and I feel like I'm still learning.
Do you feel like there are roadblocks in food? Before I even ask that, how do you define food justice?
Access, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, giving people as much access as possible to the things that are around them. Like, we're not asking for a lot here, right? It's like, you know, during the pandemic, it was crazy how much food there was to give and how little people were ready to receive it. Because folks is on some like, oh, well, you just give it to the people that deserve it, that need it. And it's like, well, are you telling me that your diet is such that you don't need this food? Like, well, who, how? Well, you know, it blew my mind. It blows my mind continuously how much food goes to waste.
Right.
It's so much, you know, and I hate to use the word mindset, but it is a mindset around the people who could receive it that don't know that it's for them, you know, and that's a real interesting thing.
It is. Like, what do you think is behind that?
Oh, whiteness. You know, I mean, the whole idea that some people are deserving of something and then some people are not, and who gets to say that and all that kind of stuff. You know, you never go to no country where there's non-white people that are not willing to give. It just doesn't compute to folks. It's like, oh, here's food, give it to the people. You know, unless there's some kind of power structure that's trying to starve people out and keep them from being nourished so that they can't make good decisions. And that's really, you know, I think where it all boils down to, that lack of access, because it just doesn't make any sense.
You said many, many words. Many, yeah, there was just, you know, one of the things that I love about my sister, and this is why she's my lifeline, is because she gonna make it plain. She's not gonna be a whole bunch of extra hooping and hollering about nothing. She gonna be like, well, yeah, I mean, it's whiteness and structural racism.
It's such a crazy thing. It really is, because I, like, part of my deal is like, I remember when organics were becoming popular and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, so, like, just help me out on this. You grow this vegetable in a good soil that has been taken care of, whatever, you know, it hasn't been tilled, it's whatever, it's this fancy soil, right? And you got this fucked up soil over here. You gonna grow the same thing in both soils and then charge a premium charge for that and then sell it to people and say, this is the thing you should eat, but you're still growing the other thing.
Right.
And that's okay. Okay. You know, just, you know, there's just some things that just don't make sense to me. And so it's super sad, right? It's super sad because we don't know the difference. Because it's been this way for so long, you just eat what's before you. And usually what's before you is not the thing that's the best for you.
So what do you think we need to do in order to transform the circumstances? How do we get to a place where all living beings have access to real food? Because I think one of the things that comes up for me, and you touched on it a little bit, is deserving, right? People believing that they deserve to be well nourished. And I think that oftentimes people are not aware of the impacts of being well nourished. You know, folks don't understand how much of your life is impacted by what you put in your body. We are what we consume. And so, you know, if you're eating shitty food, you're gonna have a shitty attitude and make shitty decisions. So what is it that we have to do in order to encourage people to understand that not only are they deserving, but that there are ways and means to have access to good food?
You know what?
Ways and means.
Real, real simple. I think one really, really simple way of it, and I'm working on it myself personally, is just eat a variety of vegetables. Right? Like, if you were to eat a variety of vegetables, then you would start to see what's out there. And then that may stir your curiosity, because if you only eat what you're familiar with, right? Then so let's say for Black people, right? You're going to eat greens and you think you're doing something, right? Ooh, like greens. And you have salad.
No animals in it.
Right. You have salad, right? And you're like, oh, okay, I have salad. Then after that, like, you're kind of, culturally speaking, like, you know, if you don't eat okra, right, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Right? It's talking about like cultural vegetables, right? So then you got to kind of go out. And then I think that could continue, that could spur you, because you can't go out to eat vegetables, mm-hmm. right? Like, what you going to do? You're going to go to the closest thing I can think of, which is how I kind of started eating other vegetables too. It's like, you can go to a Chinese restaurant and you'll get a ton of vegetables. Right. But it's like, after that, unless you're eating at the co-op kind of store all the time. But then again, eating at the co-op will brighten your senses to be like, oh, there's other vegetables. Right. Like, and I think that could start, it has to start real simply. it just has to. And like, I'm not a proponent. Like, I'm not pushing vegetarianism, as you well know. But
yes, I'm clear.
But I know that it's like, okay, you gotta figure out something, and you gotta start somewhere. So, like, to me, that would be the easiest thing is to pick. Can we pause?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Know.
Well, there you go.
If you are a historically oppressed group of people and traumatized, is just feeling better in your body a good enough reason to make that leap, right? Or do we need to lean into the multifaceted impact of how a localized food system does everything from creating jobs to, you know, changing our minds to, like, I just wonder, you know?
Sure. I mean, but then you got to go back to what you said in the beginning about, like, your thought processes. You said how, now the original question was like how to get folks to even be interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I said you got to make it hella simple, because it's like people are not thinking about it around that way. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are, ooh, the mindset of people right now, right? They're like, the quicker, the faster, the better. I don't need no job. Let me go, you know, do shift work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So they're not thinking about the fact that, you know, any of that is connected to their local economy until it's all gone. And it's like the pandemic is so crazy. I feel like it was almost too short, because
mm-hmm.
people didn't have to go without for too long. So they still think they can make their way around it. And then therefore there's another way out. And it's like, until you realize that there really is no other way out of this situation other than to rally and bring it in close together, I just don't know how people are going to make that kind of shift.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sad and it's like, you know, really trying to get granular with it so you can figure out what is going to make it inspiring enough for people to be more curious and make that switch.
Yeah.
I remember, like, it was right before the pandemic and we had ran out of rice in the city. Like, you couldn't get rice in Chinatown. You couldn't get rice at Costco because it's some, I don't know, right? It was like, you know, the ships didn't come in or whatever. And I was like, is anybody watching this? You know what I'm saying? Is anybody paying attention? And I don't, you know, I was freaked out, you know, and a lot of people were like, oh, it'll be all right. And I think that it was all right too quick for you to realize that if rice is gone, that's so significant. Folks will starve and die if there's no rice, right? So it's like, and then what will you supplement it then for then? Because it's just such a cheap crop. It's like, and it's not, right? Like, it isn't, because you think about the process in which it takes to harvest rice, and it's amazing, one kernel at a time, you know, kind of idea.
And the transportation, like, that's the thing too, that we are often not thinking about is, sure, you with your money in hand go and buy a particular crop, and to you that crop, wheat, corn, soy, rice, right, those things are a couple dollars. It seems cheap, but what you're not aware of is that it's pretty expensive considering that your tax dollars are subsidizing having access to that particular crop. So, you know, you think that you go and you get fast food and you get a burger and that's just some bread, and that you're just spending a couple of dollars, but it's more like a layaway plan that you're spending money that you don't see in the immediate, but is definitely being spent in order for that to happen, which means that we're making investments in big agriculture, but that big agriculture is having an impact on our environment because the amount of distance that it takes in order right. for that crop to get to us, the kind of pesticides and so forth that are used to just monocrop, right? Like right. our whole life experience is meant to have biodiversity from the humans to the plants. We're supposed to have a level of diversity. And so when we start just growing one thing in one place for too long, we done fucked up the ecosystem. You right. know?
But that kind of change in that awareness, that's going to come through babies.
Through babies.
The babies are the only ones that's going to really get with that. Mm. It's got to be a long-term thing because it's like, you say that, right? And the gravity of it is so heavy. Like, it's like, oh God, like people don't get that part. And they not gonna, because again, the quicker the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people are so in close proximity to devastation at all times.
Mm.
So the longevity of thinking about that part, even though it doesn't make any sense, right?
Because everything that you're talking about right now is connected to that long money change. Everything.
Right. right. But it's the babies. It's the babies. And I don't know, like, that's where the heaviest impact is going to be.
Only if we say so, though. I think sure. I think, to me, one of the things that's profound about what you do is you have a vibrant young staff. You've educated them well. They know the importance and the impact and the power. I don't know that I see that with a lot of places that I go. Like right now, I'm wondering why the food policy councils around the country are not generating lists that say, these are the restaurants that are farm to table. And not only are they farm to table, but the education and the treatment and the payment of their workers is also equitable and rational, right? Like there's not enough of a, to this idea.
There's not. And then the onus is on the owner
mm-hmm.
to try to convey this. So then, you know, where we get it, it's like, okay, folks come in and they're like, wow, this is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Why, yes, ma'am, it is. You know, it's expensive for us too. Like, I really, really trying to convince Damon, I'm really here for the open book concept.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to understand, like, it's, we had to have a sit down with our staff. It's like, okay, restaurants are thought of as successful when they are looking at a 2-3% profit margin.
What? Wait, what? Hold on. 2-3% profit margin?
Yeah, like if that's like the bare minimum, like if you're doing 2-3% of your, if 2-3% of the money that you bring in the door is considered profit, then you're winning. Now, 15%, you're balling, but like, let's guess what the 15% style restaurants are.
Right.
They're like fast casual, you know, because they can charge more, but it's costless, you know? So it's like, it's an uphill. So we're educating ourselves, we're educating our staff, then we're trying to get to the part about educating our, you know, you try to do that. How do you do that? You have this exhaustive list of all of these different, like Damon spent months curating a list of black and brown and women owned liquor companies.
Mm.
You know, the amount of effort that they go through every week, because you can't buy all of those in one place.
Right.
Gotta go, you know, that effort, you know, that onus to communicate what that is on us.
While they run the restaurant and provide good food.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's an amazing thing. And we're committed to it. Like, we are completely committed to it. And it's a lot. It's a lot. So
I just think that you can do it in small bites, right? You can do it in ways to get people on board. But I think really, like with these kids, that's where your gold rush is going to come into play, because they understand that this interconnectedness of all things, they understand that. They've had to understand it. Global warming makes them understand it, you know? So I think that's where our goal is.
Well, I'm so grateful that you are doing the work that you're doing to make sure that the next generation of Seattleites knows what's popping. And it is my premonition, it is my belief that the world will be blessed by your wisdom and your knowledge, that communion is in no way the beginning, but I also don't think it's the middle. And I know for sure it's not the end. That what you have to give to the world in the way of good food, but also education around good food, is that part, I think, is just starting for the world. So I'm really, really grateful for that. So for you, what's next? You got this successful, amazing, beautiful, truly fucking breathtaking restaurant that's in Seattle. You getting all famous, people writing about you in the famous fancy schmancy magazines and whatnot, talking about, you know, you inside the top 12 in the world, all the magic and so forth. So what you want to give to the people now?
I think that deeper level, deeper sense, like, and part of the reason why, like, kind of going back to like why I think the kids are kind of the answer is that, and not to put it all off on them, but we just got more work to do, right? And our work is, we're going to be talking about like the inner work that we have to do, right? It's more insular. And so for me, that conversation comes around where we're talking about, okay, who are we? Why are we here? And what tools do we need to like kind of get to that why we're here? And so that's really like really important to me, to kind of spur those kind of conversations. So I think a big part of that is understanding who we are as sexual beings, because that sexual, sensual part of us is the part I believe that motivates us to do the things that we're here to do. So I think there's a big conversation out there, because it's like, it's so great, you know, we're all more liberated and we can have more conversations about sex, but that doesn't speak to us as who we are as sexual beings. That's more about the act. That's more about the liberty to be able to have those conversations, but there's so much more. And I want to be a part of that conversation to, you know, help us be more connected with ourselves, and we can then be more connected to the land.
I love that. I love Sexy Christy. Like, Sexy Christy is the bomb. And she knows stuff, man. It reminds me of one of my favorite Audre Lorde pieces, The Erotic as Power. Have you read that?
Mm-mm.
When you get a chance, I can't believe for all the years that we've known each other that we have not talked about this.
Mm-mm, we haven't.
It's going to change your mind. It's going to fundamentally, I don't even think it's going to change your mind. I think it's going to validate everything that you've been talking about anyhow. It's going to be, that's exactly what I mean. Essentially, she talks about this idea that we make all of our decisions from this sensual place, from and that erotic energy is the thing that fuels all things. So when it's inhibited, we don't believe that we deserve, we do not thrive, we do not push forward. But when we feel liberated in it, we know that we're worthy. We insist upon having access to it in all spaces. So I am gassed about that. And maybe the next time we get a chance to talk to you, we will be talking about Sexy Christy.
I'll take it. I'm here for it in all the ways. I think that there's been so many moves made to be more liberated sexually, and I think that's beautiful. But at the same time, it's like, let's get deeper with the kids. Like, that's cool and stuff like that. But like, let's see what does it mean? Because it's an energy, and we need to understand that energy, and we understand what to do with it. So, yeah.
Well, here is to all that you are doing, to all the magic that you are giving into the world through food, through sensuality, through being the goddess that you are, for being my sister friend. I so appreciate you and taking this time. I know that you are absurdly busy, but this was well worth my time. I pray it was for you as well. Welcome to the fun bunch, my sister. For those of you who want to know more about Christy Brown, please follow her on social media. Look up Communion. What are your social media handles?
That Brown Girl Cooks is probably the best way to follow me. And then Communion is the restaurant. And yeah, that's it. That's it awesome. Right now.
Well, thank you again. I love you so much. I appreciate you. Y'all, we are signing off, and we'll talk to you again very soon. Peace.